We're talking about the encroachment of wildlife into urban areas. And in particular, I'm going to be heading to a friend's cabin over the weekend, which is currently surrounded by bears. The same bears keep showing up and they're becoming pretty pesky. There aren't the only bears in the neighborhood that are doing this. And he lives out kind of in the woods. And the bear population seems to be really high. And they're aggressively looking for food. And I've noticed this a lot. We've had a lot of reports here in the upper Midwest of urban areas that had previously not had a lot of coyotes, a lot of cougar, a lot of other of even reports of wolves that are suddenly seeing these what were once sort of, you know, nocturnal or solitary animals suddenly coming closer to urban populations. And that just reminded me of this fox. I live not far from a golf course, which is in the city, and I was walking past it the other day with one of my boys, and he pointed out. He said, "Look, there's a fox," and there was a red fox, a big fox, that was out in the middle of the golf course, running around the golf course in the middle of the day. Now, usually that means rabid. But it can sometimes mean disturbed, that they had some sort of, lair that had been, somebody had accidentally uncovered, maybe with a golf ball or something. But whatever the case is, it was interesting to watch this fox running around the golf course, trying to find a place to go, trying to find a place to hide, and see these golfers who are all, like, you know, ready to tee up and ready to drive, and suddenly they look up and there's a fox running at them. You see these golf clubs flying up in the air and guys jumping in their carts, and it was mayhem. I don't know eventually what happened, but I hope everybody was okay. Anyway, it's just one of the reasons why I was talking about weird things that have happened to you out in the woods as a theme through Open Lines. It is that kind of a weekend where a lot of people are going to be out and they're going to be camping. They're going to be doing other things. So kind of fun to hear what you have seen at one time or another out in the woods or wherever you want to take the show. It's Open Lines next. In for George Norrie tonight, this is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. All right, so back to Open Lines. By the way, take a look online. Great stories at coasttocoastam.com tonight if you haven't been yet. And I think a fun blog with those bear photos up. And yes, I know I look like a dork in those headphones I'm wearing in that picture. Paul is in Memphis on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Paul?
Hey, Ian. How you doing?
Good. How are things in Memphis? Love Memphis. Great city.
Oh, yeah. I'm here to gripe about the direction that the auto industry is going these days. You know, fuel economy and cutting down on the imports of oil.
Okay.
Everybody's gone totally crazy over hybrid electrics and battery electric cars.
Okay.
And I think it's like totally 100% the wrong way to go.
What do you think what direction should we be going in?
Well, the whole hybrid electric and pure electric deal right now, the way the state of technology is, either one of them is really bloody expensive.
Fine. Which way do you think we ought to go?
Okay. There's a lot of technologies that are out there that are, some of them are real old and have been ignored or fell into disuse. Some of them are existing now but undercapitalized and can't get off the ground, and some of them are in development and look real good.
Like,
first of all, engine downsizing. So where you take a little bitty engine that under normal conditions gets pretty good gas mileage, but, you know, when you mash the pedal all the way to the floor and to accelerate the merge with the expressway or something, you want more horsepower out of it. It basically, if you take a small engine and you turbocharge or supercharge the holy heck out of it, you know, you can get that surge of extra horsepower you want for, you know, some spiffy driving. But then when you take your foot off the pedal, the boost pressure drops down. And
right. So give me another good example then of another direction you would go then. If it's not electric or hybrid, what would it be?
Okay, engine downsizing, number one. There's another technology out there called smart plugs. You can Google it. It's a catalytic ignition spark plug that runs on different, you know, a variety of different fuels, including it'll even ignite a 50% alcohol water mixture.
Huh. Okay, well, great.
Actually,
Those are good things. And someone can Google that and they can get more information about that.
Yeah, and then there's the Fiat Multair.
No, I think that's good. I think two are good to work with tonight. I think that's totally fair, and I hope you feel like you had your say on that. So, good. So other engine alternatives other than hybrid engines. Let's get to Gerald in San Diego on Coast to Coast. Gerald?
Hey, how you doing?
All right, good. Open lines. Where do you want to take us?
I just got irate from the story that you told where the sheriff had to pay the phone bill in order to locate somebody that was about to commit suicide.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And I think everybody should just get so angry and say there should be a law or amendment where if it's an emergency, you just turn the phone on and bite the cost of it, even if you just have to leave it on for one day.
Well, how about this? How about just 20 minutes? I mean, they didn't have to leave it on for one day. They're the phone company. They could turn on that cell phone. They could open up that line, right? I mean, the guy had the phone on, but the line was not open. They could open up the line for the sheriff to find the guy to use the GPS or whatever they're going to triangulate through the towers or call the guy or whatever they do. And then after they find him, turn it off. I mean, how much is it really going to cost them for a half an hour for the sheriff to find them, right?
Not long at all.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even need a whole day. I know. I agree with you. And I hope why should it even take a law for someone to have compassionate enough to have the sheriff actually saying, you got to help me. You got to help me find this person. It doesn't make any sense. I'm with you 100%. Thanks, Gerald. Appreciate that. East of the Rockies, Jim is in Hyannis, Massachusetts on Coast to Coast. Jim.
Good evening, Ian. Thank you. It's really great to be able to get. Yeah, I called about the Darth Vader of the last administration, Dick Cheney, and his persistent comments about 9/11 in his little speech that was broadcast after Barack Obama.
On Thursday, right.
He mentioned 9/11 like 27 times in a 30-minute speech. That man was in a bunker. That man was underneath the ground. I was in New York, as were, you know, millions of people, of course, and people were falling out of the sky, literally. And for that man to, like, try to bring that fear and that sorrow back, as it was infuriating. And then I, earlier today on the radio, on a national program that I will not mention, a veteran called in and said, how dare, you know, someone who got a deferment, you know, be doing that kind of stuff? It really irks me. But
well, the deferment thing cuts both ways for both parties. So there's lots of people that are in a position to send other people to their deaths who missed the opportunity themselves. So, I'm with you there, just to be fair. Yeah, I don't, you know, we don't get too deep into politics on this show, but there's a certain sense of frustration, I think, that's out there kind of with government in general. And I don't know how it's going to shake out.
Well,
here's one thing.
Go to Europe and they'll arrest them.
Well, here's what I'm worried about. And I appreciate your thought, Jim. And I'll be truthful when I say this. There's a lot of finger-pointing going on at President Obama and a lot of talk about him. It's all him. And anything that happens, it's his fault. And I see this in some headlines, and I go to a lot of different websites, and I like to read opinions of all sides, and I might surprise you with where and how I vote. But what I won't do is I don't want to ever create a culture out there that makes it permissive to shoot a president. And I certainly I felt the same way about President Bush, and I feel the same way about President Obama. And I fear that there's some of that that's going on. This, you know, we would be so much better off if he wasn't here. And it's all very personal. It's sort of particular. And I don't know. I wonder what things are like these days over at the Secret Service. And I hope that they're taking all necessary steps. I assume that they are to safeguard this president. But I think they're going to be doing double duty. And whereas perhaps other branches of the government are seeing a cut in the employment rolls, I have a feeling they're adding a few over at Secret Service, over the Treasury, just to keep track of all the people that may be having designs on taking out this president. I hope I'm wrong on that, but there just seems to be a lot of talk about that. And I hope we can focus on issues and not on people. Let's go to Charles in Albuquerque on Coast to Coast AM. Charles?
Hi, Ian. I hope I can lighten it up a little bit. Gracias, Agu, for taking my call.
Thank you. You're welcome. And so where do you want to take us?
Well, you're a Minnesota Twins fan, aren't you?
I am by default, if nothing else. Sure, yeah. Guess.
I've heard that they're building a new stadium.
Yep, it's almost done. I toured it about 2 months ago. It was really cool. It was still snow on it when I toured it, but it's going to be a beautiful, amazing downtown stadium in Minneapolis for the Twins.
Well, is it a dome stadium or an outdoor?
No, open air.
Open air.
Yeah, and it's about dang time, because I just don't believe baseball should be played inside.
Okay. Well, I agree with you. I never liked that, the Metrodome. But, you know, I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan, and I'll never forget 1987.
Sure, so, I understand that. Right.
The thing is, that am I to surmise that from the fact that they're building an outdoor stadium that they don't expect to play too much ball in October?
No, that's completely false. In fact, around here, you know, people would expect to play ball in January. So don't be thinking that's true. In fact, it'll be interesting because, of course, there's still snow on the ground. And where was it? Was it Tuesday of this week here in Minnesota? It was 97 degrees in the southern part of the state. It reached 100 degrees on the very southern tip of the Minnesota, 100 degrees, and it was 34 degrees at the northern tip. Okay, look at that. That's a 66-degree swing from the top of the state to the bottom of the state. There are still lakes, as I understand it, that are just beginning to melt on the very northern tip. Now, I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but that's what I've heard, and it doesn't surprise me. So people, we're sort of used to these weather extremes, and I'm looking forward to outdoor baseball in March, even if it's in a blizzard. Elliot is in Toledo on Coast to Coast AM, where in Ohio they've played a few baseball games in snow, too, I'm sure. Elliot?
Oh, yeah, Ian, you're correct. Was calling to ask you if you saw the pictures on YouTube of the graves they dug up, the giant skeletons they dug up.
Not the giant skeletons, no. Tell me more about that.
The graves were...
Not recently. This isn't something from the last week or so.
This is from, like, I think 2 months ago or something like that.
Okay, right. I think it may have been actually longer than that. And if we're thinking of the same video, I did see one. I didn't know there were others. But, yeah, I mean, I know a little bit about it. What do you think?
Yeah, they had three or four. I mean, the grave the size of a basketball court, you know.
Right.
And this guy had been searching for Goliath's grave, you know, the giant from the Bible.
Yeah, and I know who he is.
I think they found his brother, Seth. I think they found his grave. The size is incredible, man.
Well, I'll go back to make sure we're thinking of the same thing. So I appreciate the heads up on that. And, I am waiting for it. I think that this wonderful thing we have in YouTube, sometimes, you know, there are hoaxes. But otherwise, I mean, look at the number of things that can get 20,000, 100,000, 200,000 hits, and it would never have made it to the mainstream media. And it forces all this coverage then on these cable channels, and other people are paying attention. I love the organic nature of that. So thank you, Elliot. I'll go search for that in the YouTube search box tonight and see what it come up with. First time caller line, Jim is in Springfield, Massachusetts on Coast to Coast. Jim? Did I lose Jim?
By the way.
Oh,
no, I'm here. I'm here. You there?
Thank you, Jim. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry. I'm on my cell phone. You're a great fill-in, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I have a story that's actually three phases, but it's very weird, but inspirational.
Okay.
Back in 2003, I was student teaching, and I was actually doing a Bible study with some friends of mine, like a private Bible study. So it was pretty late at night, about 1 in the morning. I was going back to my dorm, and I just had, like, this sudden fear just come on me. It was just really weird. Really intense. It really freaked me out. Then all of a sudden, I saw all these angels around me. everywhere. Some had wings, some did not. Some were flying with wings, some were flying without wings. It was just really weird. And then after, it was very quick, you know. And then after that, there's a star I noticed in the sky. It was very peculiar. It was a star. It was just flashing like white, red, and blue. And no sequential pattern per se, but it's just like red, white, blue, white, you know, whatever. It's just really weird. So I'm just standing here thinking it's a helicopter or some sort of weird UFO type of thing, but it just wasn't moving. So I walk to the star, and I'm actually getting closer to it, whereas, you know, you can't do that. All the other stars are just as far from you as always, but I can walk closer to it. This is weird. So I just really felt that, you know, this may sound really weird, but I just really felt that God wanted me to go follow the star. I had a, you know, I really believe God told me this too after that. He said, there's going to be two people underneath the star. There'll be two people underneath the star. He says, bring your Bible with you. I didn't at first, but I went back, got it, followed the star and my car, you know, and, you know, keep in mind, I had to go student teaching next morning, but I really felt I had to do this. And so anyway, it led to this parking lot of a Stop and Shop, which is our supermarket chain up in New England. So I'm at a Stop and Shop parking lot. Sure enough, there's two people there. Now, I didn't tell you this. Before I got there, the vision I heard from God was that one will stay and one will talk to you. Well, there are two men there. One man was really huge. He was about 6'7". The other man was a little bit shorter than I am. I'm a, you know, and so he's probably about like 5'5" or so. And so I was like, oh, man, I hope the other guy who goes is the big guy, you know. But what ended up happening is the small guy goes. I'm alone in this parking lot with this huge man and, like, you know, in the parking lot. And he, you know, I'm just listening to a story. And he's talking about how he's homeless and everything like that. And so I said, do you need anything? He said, yeah, sure. I need some clothes. I had some on me. And I got to show the love of Jesus Christ to him. That's phase one. And so anyway, like, I try to keep in touch with him, but he just disappeared off the earth, it seems.
Wait, what do you mean? Later, okay, wait. So you gave him those clothes, and you tried to keep in touch, and you couldn't keep in touch with him. He was homeless, and he drifted away or was he moved out of the area. Okay.
Yeah, like, just make sure, I just want to make sure. Phone number.
Want to make sure he didn't, like, you're not saying he disappeared. He just, you couldn't get in touch.
No.
Okay, all right, fine.
Yeah,
good.
Like, he just, he didn't disappear, literally. But okay, that's phase one. So anyway, a year later, I'm hooked up with a street ministry, and we were pretty much exclusive on really helping the homeless people, and we came across them. So he remembered my name. I remembered his. I will not say it. And so anyway, it's just like, wow, we really connected. And we met his needs, and along with many others. We gave, like, food as they needed. It wasn't just like, okay, we're just going to feed them once a week. It was, like, every day.
Right.
And so we really had personal relationships with these people. And so, you know, like, he asked me, how can you go to heaven? I said, it's through Jesus Christ. That's in your heart. You'll go to heaven. He did. He asked Christ into his heart. And we got even tighter. But then I had to leave the area for work. And then a year after I left, he died. And so the moral of the story that I learned from all this is that this weird vision it started with, it shows how much God loves us, how much Jesus loves us. And if we're in so much pain, Jesus will send people to us to help us out, show us salvation through him, through Jesus alone, and have our needs met on top of it.
Well, I think you witnessed beautifully there for your faith. I do think it's always interesting when you have a feeling that something's going to happen and then it does. Regardless of what one's faith origin is or whether one has one at all, there are just times when you feel like something's going to happen, and then suddenly it's like, of all the odds, you know, you're going to meet two people, and one's going to speak to you, and it just suddenly, boom, it's just out of the blue, it happens. So appreciate that, and we'll come back for more open lines. Let's try to keep them a little shorter than that if we can, so we can get everybody on, because there's a lot of folks who've been on hold for 35, 40 minutes at a time. We try to get them on before the top of the hour so that everybody gets a chance to share their story. One thread we've been kind of weaving in and out of the show is the weirdest things you've seen in the woods. And that can be of any type. I'll leave it up to you to fill in the blank on that next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Coming up tomorrow night, Seeds of Terror, all about how the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are more like organized crime organizations. Organized crime organization? I guess that's a little redundant. Anyway, that while, of course, there is an element to those organizations that are focused on the fanatic Muslim ideology, they may also be a lot more about making money than we think. Maybe more about shaking down governments and getting as much as they can to line their own pockets, and that there are plenty of companies, plenty of governments, plenty of armies out there that are cooperating with them. This is perhaps not coming as big a shock to some people out there, but when you get into the full details of this book, you'll be amazed. Seeds of Terror, tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Go to the website tonight. There's some fun stuff up there, including the blog with some fun photos. Bears in the woods around my place this weekend. Where are you going to take us next for Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM? This is Ian Punnett. There is no script for Open Lines except the one that's in your head. We'll start with Dustin in Sayre, Oklahoma on Coast to Coast AM. Dustin?
Yes, sir, Mr. Punnett. Good morning. And I'd like to say it's great to get to speak with you. I've been connected with Mr. Norrie and Mr. Bell a couple times, but first time for you.
Well, thank you.
No problem. Me and my dog enjoy sitting out here listening to all of you.
What's your dog's name?
Charlie.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah, he heard you.
My dog Jack is asleep in the corner. So
we're trying to get a cat, and I'm trying to stop him. But
okay, I understand that.
My comments about your funny thing that's happened in the woods line. It's not paranormal or nothing spectacular, but it's pretty weird to me. Me and a couple of friends, a buddy of mine, my ex, one time were camping out in the woods, and we had a pretty big campfire going. And I'm sure if you've ever been by one, you know they're a great source of light, but not for the ground, really.
Right.
And I was walking around barefooted, and as we're all talking, I took a step towards the fire, and my foot hit something kind of squishy, almost wet feeling, but more like just cool.
Right.
And I even interrupted my friends and backed my foot off, and they're like, "What's going on?" I was like, "I don't know. I stepped on something squishy." And I just slowly put my foot back down, thinking maybe it's something we discarded or
right.
Or a plant or something. And as
sure.
I did it, I heard like a little squeak. I was like, "Oh, I think I'm stepping on a frog." And they're like, "Well, don't step on a frog." So I took my lighter out and clicked it near the ground. And lo and behold, with no hole anywhere nearby and just chilling by our campfire was a mole. And I'd never seen a mole just hanging out above the ground before. And I told them that, my friends, they were like, "What is it?" I said, there's a mole on the ground. They're like, "Really? Is it alive?" I was like, "Well, I hope I'm not squishing a mole dead." And I went to just kind of poke it. And he just took off like lightning. And that's when I also learned that moles can swim, because we were right by the lake, and he jumped right in the water, and he was just down the shoreline darting away.
Well, I guess that makes sense. I mean, they're rodents, right? So I guess we shouldn't be. But that's really interesting. So I have to say, too, I've never seen a mole like that just on top of the ground.
Hanging out.
Yeah. How about that? Well, and that's the kind of the cool thing about the weirdest thing that's happened to you, the woods stories. And thank you, Dustin. See, it's not about whether it's paranormal. It's just there's something about the woods. And if you're going camping this weekend, you know, you'll know what I'm talking about, where it's just the way the lights of the fire that Dustin was talking about play off the shadows, right? And how the trees change the way that how you hear things. Suddenly, you know, the sound can come in and out, almost like somebody with a hand cupped over their mouth. And it's just something about being out in the woods. All sorts of weird things happen, and you'll never forget them. Don's in Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast, but it's open lines, Don, so you can take us anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, Ian, how you doing?
Couldn't be better. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, I want to tell you about something weird happening in the woods.
I'm listening.
When we were kids growing up in southeast Missouri, behind my house, there was about a 5-mile stretch of woods. And there had been an urban legend going around about this old hermit that used to live back up in these woods. So one winter day, me and my best friend and our brothers went hiking up through the woods, and we went deep into the woods. And we went down in this valley, and we found this old wooden shack just sitting there in the middle of nowhere, you know, surrounded by the trees, and looked like it'd been deserted for a while. So we went inside of it, and inside was a dirt floor, and there were a bunch of old pots and pans just kind of sitting around inside, and there was like a place on the floor where someone had burned a fire, and scattered all about on the floor were these bones of small animals like birds and squirrels and such.
Sure.
And through this whole ordeal, I told my buddy, I said, "Let's get out of here, because, you know, I feel like somebody's staring down at us."
Right.
And those woods were kind of weird anyway. There had been a UFO sighting above the treetops there back in the 1970s. I didn't see it, but several people witnessed it.
So in the house, do you think it was just people that were doing, who were just squatting in there? Or do you think that, what do you think was going on?
Well, I think that old hermit might have lived there.
Yeah.
It wasn't very big. The place was only about 6x8.
Yeah.
And you couldn't hold hardly more than one or two people.
Mm.
And you kind of wonder, you know, well, what happened to whoever was living there?
Yeah, and what they left behind. Thanks, Don. I appreciate that. You know, we had a hermit in my neighborhood growing up. I lived in a kind of a nice suburb, so it was weird that there was this one block where it was a mostly wooded block. I mean, it was a suburb, so it's not like, you know, I mean, there were houses everywhere, and they were all pretty nice, and I'm not pretending that I lived in any kind of rural area, but this one particular block just had a lot of trees on it, and it had obviously been held over from kind of a previous time when the town was less developed, and there was this little shack in the middle of there, and it was just full of, I mean, the outside full of garbage, and our parents were always talking about don't go there, and there's an old hermit who lives in there. He only comes out at night, and, you know, and you so the kids in the neighborhood, kids and I, finally just got up the gumption one day to go up and knock on his door, and old Joe, that's what everybody called him in the neighborhood, old Joe was like the nicest guy in the world, and I remember this, and I'll never forget it. He gave us beanie weenies, gave us little cocktail weenies. And so whenever we were hungry, if we were out pedaling around our bikes or doing something, we happened to be in his literal neck of the woods, we would go up on his door and old Joe would give us beanie weenies and we'd get on our bikes and ride off again. We never told our parents because they always said, stay away from old Joe. Mike is in Richmond, Virginia on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Mike.
Yes, sir.
All right. So where are you going to take us? Open lines.
All right. I just want to share a story with you that I never shared with anyone before. I do construction work, and one evening, I had to work really late. It was 4:30 in the morning, and I was backing the truck out of the lot, and it was real dark. And this actually has to do with, you know, having a guardian angel, or, you know, believing in God, or, you know, I'm not real religious, but I do believe in God, but guardian angels, not so sure. But I was backing the truck up, and I hit a power transformer with the truck. And so, of course, I get out. I want to straighten it back up, you know, knocked off the pedestal.
Right.
I pick it up, and it starts to slide. And then all of a sudden, it's like somebody just pushed it down, and I could not budge it again. So I was like, oh, damn. Well, I went home. The next morning, I get a phone call from Virginia Power telling me that I was really, really lucky, because if I'd have moved it another half an inch, it would have exploded.
What?
It's 20,000 volts in that power transformer. And it would have blown the truck up and me up and everything.
Oh,
so basically, that had me believing in guardian angels fairly quick. And, you know, I've never shared that story with anyone before, but
I'm glad you did. Well, that's very interesting.
Thanks for having my call.
No, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. That is interesting, isn't it? That still small voice that speaks to us so loud and clear sometimes that you just have to listen to it, only to find out later on that it was really saving your life. And it wasn't just maybe a little voice of your conscience, but it's something external that breaks through sometimes. Sammy is in Toronto on Coast to Coast AM. Sammy?
Hi, thanks for having me on. My story is strange stuff in the woods. About an hour outside Toronto in the country, picture a long dirt road, like pitch black, tall, like really tall trees on each side. And you almost feel like you're stuck in the middle of the woods, but
the long dirt road. The cathedral of trees that goes over your head, almost like a canopy of trees. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And this place has a really weird vibe. In fact, it was featured on the show Unsolved Mysteries several years ago. And it's actually a really popular place. Like, a lot of young kids just hang around. And the story is that at the end of the road, in one of the trees, a light comes. One of the previous callers also mentioned a similar story. A light comes just at night in this specific tree. It just comes on, and if you walk closer to it, it goes off. It's just really weird. And it just has a really strange vibe, and Unsolved Mysteries, again, there's a session on it. So one day we did Ouija board there, And there's a few of us, and I should mention that one of us, one of my friends, he's like an ultra-hardcore materialist. Like, he's mentioned ghosts, anything like that, and he was like, laughs at it. But he still took the Ouija seriously and just stayed quiet and did whatever. So the first time we went, we ended up talking to a supposed ghost named Helen and one named Jack. And we did it and whatever, we left. The next time we went there, there's a lot of young kids, it was the weekend, and they said, well, yeah, what are you guys doing here? Are you guys here to see the light? And we said, no, we're going to try Ouija again. It was our first time. We're going to do it again. And they said, oh, if you're going to do Ouija, you're just going to end up talking to a ghost named Helen and one named Jack.
Okay, that's weird.
That is so weird. And the guy, the materialist face, his jaw just, like, completely dropped.
Right.
He's been searching for answers for weeks. I mean, we got to get someone like Joshua P. Warren out there and do some studies. And the reason why we remember the name is because there's the young ghost, Helen. She said she's a six-year-old girl. She said to this guy, Jack Tormentor, every day.
And that How about that?
That was just really weird. And it's eerie. Like, I mean, I'm Unsolved Mysteries, an American show, and they came down to Southern Ontario
to
session on it. Yeah, that was my story.
I appreciate that, Sammy. In fact, I have this vague memory of seeing that particular Unsolved Mysteries. I know they did a couple of, you know, lights in the sky, lights in the trees, lights on the horizon, lights over the lake stories, but I seem to kind of remember that one. So, all right, so somebody else has to go back out there with a Ouija board sometime, maybe. Or don't tell people what to look for and see whether the name Helen and Jack pop up again sometime in a ghost investigation. Mo is in Baltimore, Maryland on Coast to Coast. Mo?
Hi, and first of all, I want to say I'm honored to talk to you, sir. I think that this is the greatest show on radio. You and Mr. Bell, Sonoria, phenomenal.
Thank you.
3 weeks ago, for the first time in my life, something happened to me that I absolutely cannot explain.
What was that?
First of all, let me start off by saying I'm working on a documentary about hip hop music, and I was on Google Images collecting some pictures, you know, of different hip hop artists. To be more specific, this night it was Baltimore hip hop artists, because it's a little, you know, a homage that I want to pay to, you know, Baltimore hip hop artists. Anyway.
Okay.
One of the guys that I had pulled up, his name was ASG, and I had never heard of this guy, and he's from my same little town. But anyway, the reason why I wanted to grab his picture, because the acronym stands for a son of God, and most of the people from Baltimore talk about gangster rap, the total opposite of what he must be talking about. You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So
he does positive rap.
Right, exactly. So I said, let me get a brother some love, even though I never heard of him, don't know nothing about his music. I just read a little profile. He's a Christian rapper. All right, anyway, I saved the picture, and underneath every picture, I would just type in the name before I hit enter to save it into, you know, my hard drive. So
sure.
I type in ASG, and I go to hit the enter key, but I hit a key by mistake, and a plus sign popped up after ASG, which is a cross. So
sure.
I saw that, and I bust out laughing, like, wow, that's ironic that that would happen. So
right.
I backspaced and took the cross off because I didn't mean to put it there. So
right.
Before I saved it, I said, since I don't know this guy, let me erase this and spell out the acronym so when I go back 2-3 weeks later, I'll know what it stands for. So I typed in a son of God, the three words. And then I thought it was just kind of neat that, you know, that plus sign got hit by a mistake, which is a cross.
Sure.
So I said, let me add that again. Mr. N, when I went to add the cross again, I had to hit the shift button to hit that. And there is no way in the world.
Right.
Did you hear me? No way.
Yeah, that you hit the shift before by accident. Right.
Right. I'm a pick and peck typer anyway. I don't have, you know, so I use one finger.
And that's cool.
Yeah.
That's
like,
interesting.
I cannot explain that. That's crazy. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I totally get that. Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call, brother. Have a good night. Honest to talk to you, too.
I appreciate you saying that, Mo. And thank you. I appreciate that. That's kind of cool that you can't figure out how you got that on there. Yeah, I'm with you. That sort of stuff happens to me all the time. And I just sit around just like Mo, just try to figure out, how did I do that? And sometimes you don't. You just throw up your hands and just say, I'll never figure that out. Mary's in Lafayette, or do they say Lafayette, Oregon? Mary? Do you say Lafayette or Lafayette? Did I not hit it right? Oh, maybe try it again. Maybe get a little bit harder. Okay, there it is. Hey, Mary.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Where are you going to take us?
Well, it is Lafayette.
Okay, well, if you go south of the Mason-Dixon line, in a lot of places it's Lafayette. So that's why I was double-checking. Right, I was checking.
Well, I'm going to take you out to the west coast of Oregon. And,
wonderful.
I grew up with my dad as a bear trapper, and most of the bears I saw were in a trap or on the plate of home.
Right.
I grew up crawfishing, loving camping. When I moved out from the folks, I'd go camping, and wherever there weren't other campers, because my crawfish traps, I wanted to keep them. Well, one time my mom went, it was one of the times that my mom went with her camper. I always sleep out underneath the stars. And during the day, we stayed there like 6 or 7 days. During the day, I had noticed this bear across the creek. And I pointed out to my mom, I said, Mom, look, look. And I was looking for a cub, because it was about the time that cub probably would have been about half, half her size. But I couldn't find a cub, so I don't know if it was male or female. But anyway, Mom's like, don't go try to shoot it, because my dad, he used a .22 to kill hundreds of bears. He was a government trapper. So no, I couldn't haul it out there if I wanted to. So anyway, I'm crawfishing, and right at dusk, right when it's getting dark, I unloaded all the traps and rebaited them. Well, I brought so many crawfish back that what we couldn't cook up, I should say, we had to find some way of keeping them. And if you keep them in a bucket in water, they drowned. So my mom, pulled a pillowcase out of the camper, and we tied the top of it, and I just put it in the creek, not river. And
right.
I slept about 10, 15 feet away from it and figured, hey, bear's not going to come down and bug me, or the crawfish, because I was so close to them. And I get up several times during the night. When I'm camping, it's just an automatic. And anyway, sometime between, I think it was about 3 or 5 a.m., when I got up in the morning, I go down to, first thing I do is check the crawfish traps, but I had to walk by the pillowcase, and it was shredded. There was crawfish. You could see, where they had died. And,
right.
And where she had stepped on and pulled and ripped the sack. And it's like, maybe I should have shot her, because she really ruined a good meal. I could have had a great meal instead. But it was just ironic to think that close, I didn't hear her, and she was
right.
So comfortable.
Right. The bears are so easy, just kind of like almost like Yogi Bear tiptoeing past the rangers.
Can be quiet. I mean, it's
right.
That like, I just was amazed that she came so close. And
how about
it was
that?
Her territory, and I guess she was happy I fed her. I wasn't,
yep.
But she was.
she probably misses you right now, actually, or her many descendants do. I mean, it is weird. There's so much that's going on right now with wildlife, and we follow these stories all the time about Bigfoot, and I don't know if you caught it tonight, but at Cryptomundo, they had an interesting story about the Bigfoot linguist that has been trying to crack the language of Bigfoot. So based on recordings, based on his own experience, he's, trying to work out the language of Bigfoot like some people have worked out Klingon, that kind of a thing. We put in a call. We were trying to track him down. We'll see. Maybe we can get him coming up for tomorrow night's show on Coast to Coast. Tomorrow night, again, Seeds of Terror. It's about opium, heroin, and how much is going on right now behind our backs or under our eyes with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and friendly governments and governments like ours that often just look the other way, and why, and how bad it's going to be because these groups are very well funded, what the next terrorist attack might even look like based on this research coming up tomorrow night, Seeds of Terror on Coast to Coast. One last hour of open lines. I can't wait. It's been a lot of fun. You can pick up the thread of the weirdest thing that you ever saw in the woods, too, if you want to, coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.